This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hey, everybody. Carm Capriotto from Remarkable Results Radio. And I'm here with the incredible team, or two of them, from CAMP, the Coalition of Automotive Management Professionals. Glad to have you here. It's Bill Haas from Haas Performance Consulting, haasperformanceconsulting.com. Hey, Bill.
Good afternoon.
I'm also with Kent Bullard, Chief Operations Officer and Trainer at the Institute for Automotive Business Excellence, on the web at weareintheinstitute.com. Hi, Kent.
Howdy, howdy.
You know, Bill, one of the things that you guys were chatting with me about is it's not that hard to be better than the competition. How do you see that?
The reason I threw that out there is because some recent experiences that we've had, it's like if all you do is answer the phone, you're already better than your competitors. It just floors me, right? And it's, I know that we all look at what we do in terms of being independent repair shops. And we look at the dealers and we look at the service department in the dealerships and we go, man, they're trying really hard to get our business, right? Which I understand that. But what I've had two recent experiences that led me to this. And one is, I have somebody in our office that does secret shopping. They're calling shops. They're calling our client shops. They're calling our clients' competitors because we're trying to assess how they stand in their marketplace in terms of how well they handle calls and take care of customers. Well, in this particular market in the Midwest, on the call list, three of the calls were for service departments at car dealerships. And multiple calls were made to this car dealership, got to the service department, had to leave a message, and we're still waiting for those calls to be returned.
It's funny to me how much new technology is out there to connect us to our clients. And yet there's still people pick up the phone and just say hi.
Well, Kent, not only that, they can't even pick up the phone to check voicemail, right? You talk about technology. It's like, yeah, if you're busy, the phone will capture a message, but you have to be smart enough or interested enough to go check the voicemail so you can return somebody's call. So this went on like 2 weeks ago, right? And we're just like, we're looking at this and we're going, wow, this is just amazing. There's opportunity here and these phone calls don't even get returned. So that's like 2 weeks ago. So the other night I come home from the office and my wife says to me, she says, I waited all afternoon for the car dealer to call me back. I'm like, for what? What do you mean waited all afternoon for the car dealer? She said, well, I got that recall. Yeah. Well, I called them and I couldn't talk to anybody. So I had to leave a message and I waited all afternoon for them to call me back. So she's frustrated with me that she's waiting for the car dealer to call back. And I'm like, wow, this is just more of the same. I mean, I don't get it. So I just think that for our people, the people in the independent repair market space, right, it's all you got to do is answer the phone and you're already better than your competitor. And then with a little bit of training, we can even help you do well in answering the call and asking the right questions and capturing that business because the competition's certainly not interested in doing it.
Between both of you and your clients, do you have clients that will let a phone go to voicemail?
Yes.
It happens, but we try not to. We try to have things in place so that somebody else can pick the phone up. So you have kind of a triage there. If the primary service advisor can't answer it, it's going to ring to the next person and they need to know that, hey, I can't answer this. So I'm going to push it over to the next person and then the next person. Yeah.
So the way I look at this, Carm, is this. The person that's going to answer the phone has to be trained to answer the phone correctly. And hopefully that's who's answering the phone. Unfortunately, there's going to be times where they can't answer every call. To me, the next thing you have to look at is I don't want them to stop talking to the person they're talking to
who's right
and
there.
Place somebody on hold to answer the next call because you've just told that person you're not important anymore. So that's the wrong thing to do. I think it's important that when a call goes to voicemail, the voicemail has to be set up correctly so the people are at least interested in leaving a message. Because if your voicemail is incorrect, nobody's going to leave a message. Because the biggest problem with voicemail is most people won't leave a message because they just think they went to voicemail hell. That call's never going to be returned. Well, in a lot of cases, they're right. But if you set up your voicemail correctly, people will leave messages. Beyond that, I think the thing that what we find most times is if calls are not getting answered and multiple calls are going to voicemail, we're understaffed. That's the problem we have to fix. We don't have to fix answering the phone. We have to fix having the appropriate people there to be able to answer the phone. And then, like Kent just mentioned, like, you're going to have that hierarchy, right? We want the phone answered by the third ring. So if someone else, maybe there's someone in the office, maybe there's someone in parts, and they hear that fourth ring, they know that's their trigger for them to pick up the phone. You have to train those people to answer the phone correctly, because typically they can't help the caller.
Everyone needs to be trained on how to answer the phone.
So everybody has to be trained depending upon what their roles are in the business. So I'll train a service advisor to answer a phone one way. I'll train a technician to answer a phone completely differently, but the phone got answered. So if a technician has to answer the phone, it's much different in that they're answering the phone and their spiel is, unfortunately, Kent's not available. If I can have your name and number, I will have Kent return your call as soon as he's able to. Because I don't want the technician to try and field calls about, how much is it? Is my car going to be done today? What's wrong with my car? Has my car, all that stuff. The right people can answer those questions. And you only want that conversation happening with the right people. So you train the people that are not responsible for having that conversation to answer the phone completely differently.
When the phone rang back in the day with our business, I was taught revenue and opportunity and customer service. And when I think of some smaller shops and they're challenged and there's chaos going on, but I just recently had this experience at my optometrist, Bill. I mean, we're talking a 50-year legacy go-to company. I had to get in for a glasses thing, and all day it went to voicemail, all day. And all I could think about is maybe something happened to the family, it's a family business. It wasn't. I just think someone didn't show up for work and they just put it on. They had so much going on and so busy. And then the next thing, guys, and I don't mean to go down a rabbit hole, but it seems like emails are in that, not secondary, tertiary, it's just like the fourth thing that people care about and want to do to even answer them back for people. So are we in this bad, ugly communications, non-caring loop?
You've got so much going on. It's really chaotic. It's very hard to do the right thing because you're overwhelmed. One of the things you can do is make sure that all the different channels that you have for communicating with customers has a process for it. Who's supposed to handle it? How do we handle it? What's the follow-up look like? How often are we checking that? You've got shops now who have SMS messages that they're managing. These text messages, phone calls, voicemails, emails, all of it should have some kind of communication process. And the people, like Bill was saying, where you've got a technician who's trained a specific way to answer the phone, you're going to have a triage for each one of those. If somebody is going to handle this and they're in this position, this is how this person should handle it.
Such a great point. I want to just point people to this episode that I did with Rui Martins called it The Reservationist. And we've discussed this in the past, if you will, kind of a virtual service advisor, someone that could be so attached to the business through cameras and through VoIP phones. The whole idea of The Reservationist was, number one, to change from having an appointment to a reservation, because it is so much more commitment when you're going to eat dinner having a reservation. But I've been in shops where they've got their front counter service advisors to the face of the customer. And then there are people behind the glass, if you will, behind the curtain, and they're working on all the phone calls, all the follow-ups, CRM opportunities, even estimating. I guess if the shop is on its way to growth in certain size, they could possibly, well, we need to have another technician. Maybe we also need to have someone in support of our customer service experience.
I think you're seeing a lot of shops trending that way, that you're starting to, I mean, if I look at it, if I will really want to have an expert in handling customer service, I want them to focus on that. I want them to focus on the customer and the customer's needs and how we're going to provide, right? Get them home, get them to work, how long is this going to take? All that kind of stuff. To the point that we're now seeing shops that support person is writing the estimates. They're sourcing the parts. They're looking up labor times. They're getting the repair plan from the technician. And so that now, when that estimate is done, it just goes to my customer service person, and they're just the one that's selling the work. You're going to see in those stores that the level of customer service is going to be ratcheted way up, because that customer service person doesn't get the interruptions and the distractions of, oh, the parts guy's calling me back. Maybe he finally found that wheel bearing I needed. They don't need that. They don't need that distraction and interruption. They need to be able to focus on providing the customer a great experience.
The issue is that these professionals get prioritized in the wrong places. I mean, workflow still has to happen. They still have to be doing the estimates. They still have to manage that. That stuff's expected. But we always need to be prioritizing the relationship with the customer that's there. And if somebody is not charged with that, and we're getting so overwhelmed that we can't prioritize that relationship, that's when you're going to see everything start to fall apart. Yeah. And so, yeah, it might be that, hey, I need to clean up my processes so that we could be more effective and prioritize that time so that we can build a relationship. Or maybe it is a question of, I might need to have somebody who can handle this operational stuff so that we can have somebody who's focused on the relationship.
Boy, this whole thing started with Bill saying, we call the dealership. And didn't you say we should do everything that they're not? No follow-up, no this, no that. And boy, that is a hell of a strategy to run a great independent service repair facility from.
Well, you know, if you think about it, you had mentioned the optometrist before. So we had a recent experience. My wife, again, I'll keep dragging her into this. She was having trouble with her eyes, and so she had to have cataract surgery. Okay. Well, when we went to the appointment with the eye surgeon for her cataract surgery, he just explained, this is what I'm going to do, and this is why I'm doing it. You know what this surgeon never did? He never told us how much. And then, so after you get done meeting with the surgeon to understand what he's going to do and why he's going to do it and what the results are going to be, you go to the waiting room and you wait to get called into the business manager's office. And the business manager explains what this cost, what options there are, how you're going to pay for it. And then when all that's done, then you talk to another person who then schedules your surgery. And sitting back, just going through that whole process and sitting back, and I'm like, that's really interesting. In our industry, we let technicians tell people how much it costs to do something all the time. And it's like, that's the wrong person to tell somebody what something's going to cost. It's just like you talk to business owners, that technicians, and now they're business owners. 2 days ago, I had this conversation and we were talking specifically about his store and how things have improved. And you know what his answer, you know what his reason was? I'm staying off the counter, because he knows he's his own worst enemy. When he's at the counter, he's too quick to give something away or sell it for less or have this intention of, well, maybe that's a lot of money for them. Maybe they're not, right? And he knows it. So by removing himself, his business has benefited. And I'm like, damn, that eye surgeon's a lot smarter than a lot of our shop owners, because he doesn't tell how much it is. He lets somebody else handle that.
I don't know that I would want my surgeon to be having to balance the budgets and profitability. Right. I want him to be focused on my eyes.
Right.
Well, in the complicated world of healthcare today, they wouldn't know until, I mean, again, he's not qualified to do it, but the business person who knows your insurance coverage, whatever plan you're under, it happened to me in the operating place that sent me a notice that says, when you come here, you have to have this much money. And I loved it. It was like, can I use 360 payments? God. Debit, credit, check? We'll take the credit card.
I think Leanne made a good point, though. I don't necessarily want my technicians wearing multiple hats, though you should prep for it. Right. I want to organize things that the people are good at and focused on what they're doing, just like my surgeon needs to be good at doing the surgery. I don't need him prioritizing any other work.
Right.
So it kind of brings back to what you were saying, Carm, about having somebody who's dedicated to the back end workflow things, you know, estimates, all that, and then somebody who's dedicated to the relationship.
We decided, let's do this episode. It's episode 922. I was blown away by the conversation that we had. It was like, I've seen this work. I've seen people talk about it. And then he brings, I know places that are doing this. And it's really successful. So when you listen to the objectivity of this idea, and then you hear him nail why it's important and how it's working, it needs to be a position in our company that we have to think through, instead of maybe hiring a QC person right away or another production specialist.
So that reservationist, the idea or the concept is that people are making a reservation rather than an appointment.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you know what the reservation is like at a car dealership today?
It's atrocious.
Can't say that I've ever been to it.
So there are car dealerships today that when you call to make your reservation, they process a $50 payment.
That's a lock.
Yes.
No way.
And when you show up and have your car serviced, that $50 is applied to the bill. If you failed to show up for the appointment, you just lost $50. That's their strategy for capturing work for the customer who makes an appointment and doesn't show up. Their strategy is if we charge them $50, they're going to show up.
I take issue with that. I had to schedule an appointment with the dealership, right? I had a newer car. There were some issues with it. I was scheduling with them. I had an appointment. I scheduled my appointment with them, 8 o'clock. I show up. The gentleman who was receiving the vehicles coming in starts barking at me through the window. What are you here for? You have an appointment. He goes, for what? For this issue that I talked to somebody on the phone. I have an appointment. All right, go there. Okay. I pull up, have my keys in my hand. He goes, leave keys in the car. Like I'm some idiot. And I don't know what you want me to do, sir. I came for an appointment. Leave it in the car. Where do you want me to go now, man? Go inside. And then I waited 19 minutes for somebody to say hi to me.
What a great experience, huh?
It was a wonderful experience. And just to give other people comfort, if you're worried about competing with the dealership, that's like, okay, you're providing much better experience. Don't stress. Focus
way
on yourself.
Better. Way better. Way better. And now the shop owner goes, oh, but the dealer does it for less. Yeah, if you ever get it done.
Hey, let's face it. Your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. NapaTrax has made selecting the right shop management system easy by offering the industry's best, most comprehensive SMS. Now, it all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you need to run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice, and having local representation is a huge plus. Customizing tracks to your business, whether you're a one-person shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company, a representative consults with you to help optimize your shop's workflow, efficiency, and profitability. Tracks always has the flexibility to do business how you need to do it, which means it can also grow as your business grows. And unlike the other guys, we'll be there for you after installation with the best training and support in the business. Yes, a learning management system tailored to each role in your company. Simply put, Trax was designed and built for shop owners just like you. Visit us on the web at NapaTrax, that's NapaTrax.com. Speaking of the dealer, I had Andy Bizzub on a while back. We did a great episode called Unpacking the Dynamics of Consumer Choice and Pricing, and it was really a cool episode. Sounds a little heavy, but it's got a lot of merit to it. And I was asking Andy about his third location, and he says, I opened it up on Dealer Row in this particular area of Chicago. And he says, he's a Porsche guy. He repairs nothing but high-end Euros. And so Andy says, all of his buddies that he knows in that area that have these upper-end cars says, thank you for opening up. This was the only choice we had. Oh, we hate the dealer. And can you imagine even having that upper end, having that arrogance? And we know that we have to have people, you know, and you've probably heard me say this, the new position in the company, the CXO, the chief experience, the client experience officer. And if we could just get that the client experience right in 2024 as we work hard with our team on it, we could win an incredible revenue growth stream. Despite the fact that COVID is over and we're back to the normalcy, whatever we want to call normalcy is, but it's not going to be, the river's not going to flow as much as it has. All right. Thank you. This was great. I appreciate this. Thanks for all the great tips. Kent, are enough shop owners doing performance reviews, doing them right?
No. There's a fear to holding people accountable and having these reviews. And I think it's the context with which they're framing these meetings, right? Like for me, like I literally just had a coaching session last week about this. And his perspective was, I have to come in, I have to spank this employee and be mad at them and angry with them. And I'm like, that's the wrong way to look at this completely. So like for me, I don't even call them performance reviews. I don't call them disciplinary meetings. I call them improvement discussions and development discussions. This is all about lining up the employee to be successful. And that's the whole context we need to take it with, right? If just that reluctance of, I feel like I have to punish the employee that I care for, and this is the context of framing it in, reframe it. talk about, I know they're experiencing some challenges. How can I help them develop these skills or talents, or even provide the process or the techniques that could help them be successful? Because I want my employees to be successful. If they win, I win. And so how do I line them up for success? And those touch points, like if you're not having them, please have them, because those are perfect touch points to say, hey, how are you doing? What are you struggling with? How can I help you? Here's some things I know fix this issue, and let's follow up. Let's set some goals and targets and help you identify whether or not you're winning the game, right? Because again, oftentimes these people, not only are they not having these meetings, but they're also not even setting goals or targets for the employees who live in ambiguity, and they don't know whether or not they're being successful during what they're doing every day. So how can I have a meeting?
How can they win if they don't know what's expected of them?
Yeah. And so that's the other bit of this is like, I don't feel I can have the meeting because I don't track any of this stuff. So I have no legitimacy behind this. It's all my personal bias around, hey, you're performing poorly. And the employee goes, I thought I was doing a pretty dang good job. It doesn't feel good to hold somebody accountable in that context.
Question that I have for all of you, and thanks for bringing this up, Kent. If I had not, I'm a shop owner. You're one of the things that I thought would great way to break into this kind of, let me call it discipline or policy, is just to meet with your people quarterly. And they don't always have to be a review, career builder thing. How's it going? How's the family? What's going on? Get that person used to being in your office without having to worry about the sandwich effect, good, bad, ugly.
Are you talking about individually, one-on-one? Or are you talking about group meetings?
Yes, one-on-one.
Yeah, I personally just make it a habit every now and then I should at least sit down with my employee 5-10 minutes and just talk to get to know them. Seek to understand them, their personality. You can do this through like personality testing as well. But I mean, there's a lot you can learn from just having a conversation. And yeah, do it quarterly. Find opportunities to speak with them briefly, get to know them a little bit, and then you can go on with your day. That open channel of communication tells them that it's okay to come and talk to you. It's yeah, okay.
That should happen
even if
very,
I'm the boss.
Very regularly.
Yes. Now,
it shouldn't be, here's our semi-annual performance review. Here's our quarterly review. That should happen weekly, daily, just in passing. Just let them know that you're human, they're human. We got some things in common. We have some differences, but I always took the approach of my job should really be to find out what people need, whether it's something they need in their life, whether it's something they need in their career, but find out what people they need. Once I know what they need, it's my job to make sure they get it.
I think you have to have both. That's the caveat here is people feel like they've got to be super rigid. They've got to have this, here's our performance review and everybody's going to be strict and all that. But then they forget the other side of it. And you have to have both of those things. One thing is that like a quarterly performance review, it sets clarity around what's going on. Here's the metrics. Here's the targets. Here's where you performed. Here's our goals. And then you can discuss strategy for improving. And then those interpersonal are all about building the relationship because it's very hard for me to set a target for somebody and say, hey, go do this. If I don't have a relationship and trust with that employee, and I haven't set an expectation. If I'm not having those quarterly meetings, I'm not setting goals, then going to them and saying, hey, improve your performance. There's no, how do I do that? What do you mean? I thought I was doing a good job. It's meaningless, right? So you have to have both and often. And I would suggest breaking bread, man, sharing food with the team. It's important.
It's almost social. Throw a pizza in front of the team and it becomes a party almost in an informal way because it's so cool to stand there with a pizza and a Coke and just talk about yesterday or tomorrow, what's going on, the big game. And that's great camaraderie.
Well, also every now and then I'll go to lunch. I'll go out, I'll have a lunch. I might invite an employee. I'm not picking favorites. I'm not picking one employee or the other. But if there's an opportunity for one and I say, I haven't really talked to this person in a while. Hey, do you have time? I know you've got some work going, but let's go get lunch. We get lunch real quick. We have an opportunity to break bread, talk about things, and then we can go back to work.
Or, you know, that's a really great way. Lunch, I really like lunch because it's a really great way to terminate an employee. You take them to lunch and only one of you comes back.
That's terrifying. Every time you invite somebody to lunch, they're like, this is it. I'm getting terminated here. Dave last week went to lunch. Where's Dave? So I'm not ever going to go to lunch with Bill.
Benefits. Let's talk about benefits and the kind of benefits we need to provide our people. And again, it goes back to I can't, I will not. It still goes back to the profitability of the company. And it goes back to being able to hire the right people. It's such an interesting circle there, a circle of success that comes into the company and goes back out to the people.
I think you have to get away from that whole I can't, because that has to become I must. It's like, and we are having so many conversations lately about benefits. Oh, well, we pay half their insurance. Well, guess what? Somebody else is willing to pay all their insurance. So Figure out how to do it. Okay.
I mean, things like your PTO, sick leave, holidays, bonuses and incentives, medical, dental, vision, 401k, life insurance, disability, all this stuff, that everything I just mentioned, that is expected now. Correct. So if you don't even have those, you're behind the times. And those of you out there who heard this and got scared, I mean, it's the way that the market's going. By the way, all the young people, that's what they're looking for.
Not only that, but here's another one, Kent, that people are not going to start a new job without some paid time off. People are not going to say, I'm going to work for a year and they get a week off. That will negate that job opportunity. Yeah. They're going to start a new job knowing we just went through this again, you know, recently. It's like we got a guy who's worked at a company for 10 years. He's ready to leave. He's got 3 weeks vacation. Do you think he's going to really forfeit 3 weeks of paid vacation to come somewhere and wait a whole year before he gets a week's paid vacation?
No. Not only that, but I love doing this in the interview process, obviously later in the pipeline, but going, you know, hey, you know, we do offer this PTO. Do you have any vacation schedule that we need to know about if we were to hire?
Exactly.
That's telling them, hey, I care about your time. And that's the type of environment you're going to walk into if you work for me.
Absolutely.
And so what is the issue, guys? Is it that the shop owner today cannot fathom having to do this? Is because they've never had to do it before. They know friends that have not done it. They have not gotten themselves into the 2020s. Is it they don't believe they have the money to do it? It'll disrupt the business. Where's the conflict?
I think there's some of that. I don't think I can afford it. So that's, we got to work on the profitability. We got to make sure you're getting paid for everything you're doing. You're getting paid correctly and all that, because the money will be there. You can solve that. I think the bigger issue for a lot of these guys is, well, nobody ever did that for me.
Yep. I was going to say it's mentality. It's a mentality thing. It's absolutely. I got paid pretty well at that age and nobody did that for me. I got a paycheck because I went to work. That's what I did. Yeah. And it's like, it's a completely different landscape now. Like think about the cost of living nowadays and it's just getting stupider every day. And we're not providing that safe environment to take care of the basic needs and make sure you're taken care of both financially, physically, right? Providing things like childcare assistance. Like we need to take care of their lives. These are people who are going to devote the majority of their time with us. And with the way things are, we want to make them feel safe. We want to provide those things.
The other one that I've run into a lot is getting retirement programs set up for employees, right? So whether it's a 401k or a SARSEP or whatever it is, but eventually these companies are seeing that, okay, that's going to be a great benefit. I'm going to put a benefit in place for my people to have a retirement program. We'll do some company match. I mean, all the things lining up, it's making sense. And then they're disappointed in the participation by the employees. It's like, well, we did all this work. We got all this set up and we got 10 employees and only one's going to participate. They're missing something. And what they're missing is they're not educating the employee on why this is important to have a retirement program for what life is going to be like after you're done working. Everybody thinks that, you know, it'll take care of itself. It doesn't take care of itself. And the business owner shouldn't be putting himself in a position to be the one of telling people why they should be participating in this program. They need to bring financial advisors in to work with these people to help them understand, what's your financial situation today? What does it look like it could be 5 years from now? What would it look like 40 years from now when you retire, and help them be able to illustrate to them why even if a contribution, even that small contribution is going to pay off huge dividends 30, 35, 40, 50 years from now. But that, to me, that's a missing link. You can have benefit packages, but you also have to be able to bring experts in to help you sell the program and get buy-in from your employees.
Yeah. One of the things I think is also missed is, why not even talk to them about what they need, right? There's an assumption, oh, I need to get this, because that's what I think my people need. And they implement it and they go through it. Maybe they have the professional come in and talk about it, or maybe they don't, but the participation is low. And it's like, well, I got childcare assistance services for my employees and none of them have kids. But I mean, that happens a lot. It's like you provided people that weren't interested in those specific benefits. And I'm not saying things like 401k or stuff like that, but some of those additional elevated benefits, involve them in the conversation. We have the opportunity to see these benefits if we hit these goals and targets, by the way. So that's an incentive for my team to kind of work towards some goals and targets. If we hit that, then we can implement some of these benefits. Which benefits would you guys be interested in having?
Hey, financial planners are always willing to come in and talk to your people. On the Aftermarket Radio Network, I am so proud of this team that we have and all the episodes that we do every week. And it was a couple of weeks ago that Hunt did an episode called, What is Your Number? How to Die with Zero. And he cited an author writing this. And I have to tell you, when I listen to this thing, and when you hear Hunt talk to you, you've always had these ideas, your financial planner, when you're going to retire, how much do you want, how much you have to live off. And I thought it was a great episode for shop owners to listen to and let them stop and appreciate. I got a family I also have to worry about at home, and I have a family here at work. They may not necessarily care about what Hunt's talking about because they're in their 40s, late 30s, but it's important. Can I be the person that introduces them to this kind of thinking?
Why not? Of course.
I think as business owners, we bear a unique responsibility. It's our inherent duty to provide not just these opportunities to earn a living, but we should be developing a path that's rich in purpose and fulfillment, and that involves taking care of all of those bits and pieces. We should be fulfilling people.
Completely agree. Hey, guys, we have in our remaining minutes, and I know you had mentioned this to us, Kent, in your talking points, succession. I know there's great internal candidates if they're not family, but how much family are you seeing that are stepping up and there's succession plans built around family?
There's still a lot, and Bill would probably agree with me. There's still a lot of family out there. And like recently, I've had three sons with fathers who've come to me and kind of talked to me. How did you get Cecil to put a succession plan in place? I've tried to talk to my dad about it and he can't see beyond his life in the shop. And he knows he wants to do it. He wants to get such and such. And it's like, it's a completely different perspective to take it from the son up versus the father down. And I could go to the shop owner and talk to them about taking care of their family and all this. But when I have the son coming to me and saying, like, invested in this business, I spent all this extra time, we've helped develop and grow this thing, and I still don't have any ownership or even anything on paper to help me earn, and I'm losing my interest in pursuing this business. What do I do?
Hey, son, when I die, all of this will be yours.
I had this conversation with my dad, right? And he knew he had to do this. But it's difficult. It is a difficult thing to admit that someday you won't be there. And it's incredibly hard to overcome that. And you know, we have a whole succession plan in place. That's all fine and dandy. But I mean, it took some difficult conversations and personal conversations where it was like, look, I know you love me. And this is should be in no way taken that I don't feel you love me or care about me in any way. But we have to have something in writing because you could get hit by a bus tomorrow. By no fault of my participation in this relationship or your participation in this relationship, a bus could hit you tomorrow. And what would happen to everyone in this business, including myself and my extended family, who are your grandkids and stuff like that? At least let's put something in place.
Bill, I'm sure you have had great conversations with families. Is the owner or the senior member of this family reluctant to want to do the work that it takes?
Always. We went through this with a fourth generation, two brothers working in the business. Matter of fact, the business is celebrating their 65th year in business this summer. 3 years ago, this was a real struggle because the two boys, the business was owned by their father and their uncle. And the father and the uncle had no interest in, we don't need to do everything. Everything's great. And it took me telling the father and the uncle, if you don't do this, you're not only going to lose two really good employees, you're going to lose two sons that you love and care about. And it took some hard work and some difficult conversations, and some within the family and some with outside the family. And sometimes, and I'm okay with that, sometimes I would just a sounding board. And that was okay too, because you got to have something. You got to have somebody can help with that. But yeah, it's my experience has always been it's the dad or the uncle or the grandpa or the whoever's at the top of the hierarchy right now is like, oh, that's someday.
Yeah. Someday, not today. I don't know what it is. It's and maybe because I haven't been in that position just yet, but I've always been a planner even with my kids, I hope that someday they're okay when I'm not here. So I got to do the things to make sure that they are taken care of regardless. Do it now so that when the time comes, they're going to be just fine. But it's hard. I think it's when you've lived that life for so long, and that is your entire existence. That's part of it. They likely didn't have much of a relationship or anything outside the business itself. Their world was the business. And so it's very difficult to separate yourself from that when that is reality. How do I even think about something that doesn't exist?
Always to fear the unknown.
Tough stuff. Even to hear the story of the fourth generation and the second and the third, just letting it just ooze over to the next one. And then finally, someone saying they're thinking of family, they're thinking of spouse, saying, wait a minute, we've got to have a plan here. We've got to have something concrete.
The interesting part of that story was the two brothers had witnessed the struggle that their father and their uncle had with the succession from their grandfather to their father and their uncle. And part of their drive for all this was, we can't have that happen again. It affects the family dynamic. And they were so smart to be able to recognize that and use that to leverage. Look, remember what that was like? Remember what that was like to go through that with grandpa? Then why are you doing the same thing to us?
That's quite a statement. And some of the guys I've talked to are afraid to even bring that up to their dads. Yeah. It takes conflict. Whether conflict can be good or bad, but it takes conflict to be able to change ideas, change thoughts, and have that discourse so that you can come to some conclusion together. So fathers out there, listen, there are sons who want to take, and daughters who want to take over your business, and they want to do it the right way, and then it'll make sure you have a good retirement and everything's hunky-dory, and they want to stay your sons and daughters. So
why did you throw that daughter in thing in there? Do you think there's something about daughters?
I was just covering all the bases there, Bill.
Oh, okay. All right.
But at least one, for the children out there, have the conflict. And two, for the parents out there, be open to the conversation or even start it yourself.
We interviewed Brett Fadley. I think it was at ASTE. Came out in December. It was the Aftermarket Weekly Series 188. And it never happened. So Mom, I think, was the final one to die.
That story was pretty incredible. What he dealt with in terms of how taking over the family business.
Zero money.
God, I can't imagine.
He had a brother that he split with. He finally had the business. And then she dies and there's zero money in the bank account. And he didn't know. He didn't know anything about it. And we call the episode Zero to Hero because he climbed up and he got out. I can't imagine that a parent would want to do this to a child and leave them with that level of responsibility, debt, and all that stuff.
But I don't think she intended to.
Well, I don't think she intended to die, number one.
I don't think her intention was to leave them with zero money. I think she was probably thinking it will get better. And by the time this goes to my heirs, I'll have this all figured out. It'll be better. Well,
I'll have it fixed. Yeah.
Yeah.
The only day we have is today.
Yeah. And the fix really involved her family to help her. And she couldn't get out of her own way. And anyway, we covered some really, really great topics here. I thank you all so much.
Yeah, it was fun.
The monthly camp call, the Coalition of Automotive Management Professionals, Bill Haas, this month is with us from Haas Performance Consulting at haasperformanceconsulting.com. And Kent Buller, the Chief Operations Officer and Trainer at the Institute for Automotive Business Excellence at weareTheInstitute.com. Thank you guys so much for being here. Loved the topics. I know this is going to help the industry.
Carm, Kent, you young guys, thanks for letting me hang out with you.
Always a pleasure, Bill. Always good to see you.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate it.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.